You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Morning. It is time to get up with another field day. Will this sequel create a different ending for this action hero? Meanwhile, Dallas needs to put the D in Big D. So what happens if a playmaker falls in their lap? How about them Cowboys? We're talking about it. And remember this guy? Generational prospect? Question is it as sure a thing as everybody says? We've got all the answers as we get up with you starting right now on a Friday. Delighted you've chosen to get up with us on a crazy morning leading into a huge weekend. And we've got a terrific crew getting ready to talk sports with you this morning. Who's up early today? Dan Graziano is here. Ninkovich is ready to go. Matt Miller's breaking down the draft and Joey Galloway is running a 4-3-40. We've got all that on the way. Plus, did you see this yesterday? A wild ending in the game between the Marlins and the Mets. It ends with a bases loaded hit by pitch. You need the explanation, and you'll get it from Buster Olney in just a matter of moments live. Meanwhile, did you see this Kawhi Leonard dunk? Look at the poster slam on DeAndre Ayton. Basketball highlights are on the way. And of course, the Masters started yesterday, and Tommy Fleetwood was part of the story. Look at the ace on 16 on a day where the course played very tough for everyone except Justin Rose, who will go out this morning after shooting a 65 yesterday. As you can see, four shots clear of anybody else. Again, the conditions were tough yesterday. They're softer this morning. Rose will tee off a little later this morning. He has a chance to give himself a significant lead. We will have plenty of coverage as the day goes on. Meanwhile, we are 20 days to round one of the NFL draft, and that man is getting so much of the attention. Justin Fields will take part in Ohio State's second pro day next week, April 14th. That will allow the 49ers general manager and coach to be on place to see him. Listen to Richard Sherman.
I think he's going to still be the starting quarterback day one for San Francisco because they have a chance at the Super Bowl this year. But I think Justin Fields is the one, even without his athleticism, if you just took him as a standalone pocket passer and his efficiency and his completion percentage and what he's able to do week in and week out, he's a winner. He's been at a program that competes at a high level year in and year out, always in the championships, always in the big games, and he's played well.
So that's what Richard Sherman thinks they should do. The question is, what do they think they should do? Dan Graziano, Matt Miller, Joey Galloway. Graz, I'll start with you, because I feel like there's a conventional wisdom out there that it is a foregone conclusion the 49ers are going to take Mac Jones. What are you hearing and thinking?
I'm hearing similar things. That does seem to be the widely popular opinion at this point, that the 49ers are set on Mac Jones and will take him. But after they made the deal to move up to number three, Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch said that they would be attending a future workout of Justin Fields. And I believe if Trey Lance does something else here in the next couple weeks, they will take a look at that as well. So even if they're leaning toward or planning to take Mac Jones at this point, you mentioned there's 20 more days for them to continue to discuss this and potentially change their minds. So I don't think we can all the way rule out the possibility that it would be one of those other two guys at number three, even if we consider Mac Jones the favorite at this point.
And so, Joey, let me come to you, as I like to consider you the mayor of Columbus, Ohio. And so you've obviously seen every snap that Justin Fields has taken there. If Kyle Shanahan were to call you and say, how would Justin Fields work in the offense I want to run? How good would he be for me over the next 10 years? What would you tell him?
I think the question would be, which kind of offense do you want to run? We've seen Kyle Shanahan in Washington take RG3 in an offense where it was run heavy for a quarterback, and RG3 got banged up in that season, was never the same after that. So I don't know that Kyle Shanahan would want to go down the path of, we want a run heavy quarterback. I don't think Justin Fields needs to be that. But as everyone talks about his athleticism and what he can do with his feet, boy, that is a shaky ground for Kyle Shanahan to go back down because of the experiment with RG3. Now, That doesn't mean that Justin Fields can't be successful for Kyle Shanahan, because Kyle Shanahan is a terrific coach and Justin Fields is a terrific quarterback that I believe can do anything that they ask him to do. But it would be interesting to see him go that route if you're thinking of Justin Fields as an athletic quarterback that can run the ball and make plays with his feet.
Well, that's a really interesting thought, and it's something no one has brought up here for the last few weeks, so I'm glad that you did. And so, Matt, I'll come to you on that. The evaluation of Justin Fields, we can all see. We all saw him run the 40 and 4-4-4. Yep. We all understand all of the measurables. But tell everybody about the passing. He also has enormous passing numbers over his two seasons in college. So if you're looking for a passer of the football, he gives you that too.
Oh, Greeny, absolutely. And, you know, in this year especially, there weren't a lot of turnovers until toward the end of the year when we saw some struggles against Northwestern and Indiana. But he is an accomplished thrower. As you said, I actually think he has the strongest arm of any quarterback in this class. Zach Wilson is more prolific throwing the ball down the field, those YOLO throws we like to talk about. But Justin Fields is an accomplished passer. He can dial up velocity. I call him a drive ball thrower, someone who's going to use his whole body to really dial up those throws. But we saw the pro day. We saw what he did for 2 years in the Big Ten, where he, again, did not lose a game and barely turned the ball over in 2019. So I get what Joey's saying, and that's a great point about this is someone who was burned by RG3. This is also a coach in Kyle Shanahan who was burned by Patrick Mahomes, who was burned by Josh Allen, who gets burned by Russell Wilson. So I think at some point you have to look for a quarterback that's different than every iteration of a quarterback you've ever had before. Like, it's time to move past Kirk Cousins and Matt Ryan and look for where the NFL is going at this position.
And not only that, but Joey, just quickly here, and I like sometimes to make the distinction between excuses and reasons. If at times this year Justin Fields didn't look like he was as perfect as you'd want him to be, it's not an excuse, it is a reason to say that team was ravaged by COVID issues as the season went on. Yes, they had problems, they had guys in and out of practice, they had guys in and out of games, they kept having games rescheduled. It's one thing to say you have to rise above that. It's another thing to be reasonable and say those were very, very difficult conditions he was trying to navigate.
Yeah, I think when you look at any of these quarterbacks, including Justin Fields, you see some great plays, some great things that they can do, some great talent, but you have to look at him as a coach and say, can I get that out of this quarterback in my system? Kyle Shanahan is outstanding, and I believe he can. If he goes with Justin Fields, he'll be successful.
Okay, we will see. So, again, I continue to believe, and I get a sense Graziano agrees with me, that this is not a done deal yet. This decision has not been made, and we will see what winds up happening in San Francisco as we get closer. Again, the pro day is next week. Much more football as we go. But did you see how this ended yesterday? It had all of Twitter abuzz with the finish yesterday of the Mets home opener at Citi Field against the Marlins. It starts in the bottom of the ninth. The Mets are down 2-1. Not anymore. Jeff McNeil. Oh, flip that bat on your birthday, Jeff. Celebrating his first hit and first home run of the season simultaneously. That ties the game at two. But then, this is when the controversy comes. The bases are loaded. There's one out. Michael Conforto is at the plate. And that's the end of the game. That's right. That's the end of the game. He's hit on the elbow by that pitch from Anthony Bass. Home plate umpire Ron Culpa calls it a hit by pitch. The run scores. Keith Hernandez can't believe it.
No, you can't do that.
Totally got
they
a case.
They
got
to bring
here.
It back.
Totally have
yes.
a case.
They're
going to.
It's absolute.
The bottom line is the elbow was in the strike zone. The stretch should have been called a strike. Instead, the game is over and the Mets wind up the winners. Let's talk about it after it was done.
From my point of view, you know, it was a slider. Felt like it was coming back to me, and I just, you know, I turned. There may have been a little lift in my elbow just out of habit, out of reaction.
It's just frustrating, I think, more than anything, that the ball's a strike. And he went to call it a strike. And it seems like if it's in the strike zone and you get hit, it should be a strike. And you really can't say he got hit by a pitch. He knows it was a strike.
Actually, Mattingly is right. He does know it was a strike. The umpire, Ron Culpa, said after the game, the guy was hit by a pitch in the strike zone. I should have called him out. The problem, as I bring Buster only into the conversation here, is that when they went to look at it in the replay review, they're not allowed to change that part of the call. Here's the rule. Calls involving whether a pitched ball may have hit a player, a piece of clothing, or his bat, whether the ball was in the strike zone when it touched the batter, and whether the batter made any attempt to avoid being touched by the ball, is not reviewable. Again, the point here, Buster, is they're allowed to review whether or not it hit him.
they're not allowed to review whether or not he was in the strike zone. And so as a consequence, the initial call stands, even though we can all see, including the umpire, that it was the wrong call. What did you hear from people around the sport as the world went crazy yesterday?
That they wish there was some mechanism where common sense could take effect. And look, maybe there is. In the rule book, there's this great rule, 801C, which effectively allows umpires to step in and deal with situations that are unprecedented. And the unprecedented part of this is Ron Culpa, as Don Mattingly said, was moving to call this a strike. He indicated it was a strike. Then he indicated that he was hit by the pitch. At that point, you wish there was some way in the replay center that they could say, you know what, we're going to take another look at this and we're going to make sure that we're going to get the call right, because that's the point of replay. And by the way, I reached out to players with other teams last night and asked about what Michael Conforto did. That wasn't viewed by other players as being that big of a deal. It was just a reflex. At worst, he might have the ball sort of doinked against his butt from the Marlins.
Let's make sure that we're clear on what it is we're talking about here. Conforto was the batter. You're saying that the reaction is to him sort of sticking his elbow out there, sort of making sure that he got hit, which, as far as I'm aware, has been part of the game for 150 years, yes?
That's exactly right. Now, in this case, you know, let's face it, Michael Conforto was beaten by the pitch, and he just has that reflex, that instinct. His elbow stuck out a little bit. He was almost embarrassed in talking about this play afterward. Talked to folks who were watching with other teams who were watching this as it happened. They say it wasn't really that big of a deal. The Marlins might be annoyed. He might see a little blowback, but nothing serious.
All right, Robert Stanbaylor, only the third. While I have you here with this brand-new professorial look of yours, which, by the way, I love, give us some early season. We're like a week and a half into this thing. Give us a few early season takeaways the fans should be thinking about, Buster. Go.
The National League East is an absolute beast of a division. Look, this is the one division in baseball. All five teams are trying to win. The Marlins are trying to win. The Braves have won the division three straight years. How about Hembo's Phillies? They have upgraded their bullpen. They're a really dangerous team. The Mets are trying to win. The Nationals are trying to win. This division is going to be the best and have the best action all year. The baseball in 2021 is a mushball. Look, Major League Baseball didn't hide the fact that they were changing the composition of the baseball coming this year. And I've seen games where it looked pretty clear that the ball's not traveling as far. I actually asked Hembo to look into this. Fly ball's traveling 15 feet shorter than in previous years. I love this. I love the fact that we're getting away from three true outcomes and maybe into a better brand of baseball. And how cool is it that the best player in baseball might be going back to October? This is the best team that Mike Trout has played with the Angels since he began his professional career. They're off to a great start. It's a deeper team. Shohei Ohtani has looked great in this first week, and Mike Trout is absolutely thriving. So far this year, hitting .417 with an .875 slugging percentage. He's got protection in front of him. He's got protection behind him with Anthony Rendon. It'll be fun to see the Angels in a pennant chase all year.
He is Robert Stanbury, only the third. Buster, outstanding to see you. Thanks for getting up. We'll check in. Have a great weekend. All right, we're just getting rolling here as we go. Tom Brady says he has a sickness and the only cure is more football. You need to hear it and the explanation of why. Plus, the Cowboys D was dreadful last year, but one of our crew thinks Jerry needs to go out and get more offense in this draft. Is that insane or does it make all the sense in the world? It's Get Up. Today we're on ESPN2.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
Get Up is brought to you by Duracell Optimum. Next stop, Dallas. After missing 11 games this past year with an ankle fracture and dislocation, Dak Prescott was seen earlier this week throwing in a video that surfaced on Twitter and looked extraordinarily good. And while the Cowboys' offense took a major hit last year after he got hurt, their defense was really their problem. They were 23rd in yards allowed, and it usually looked worse than that. In less than 3 weeks' time, the Cowboys will be on the clock for the 10th overall pick in the draft, and Todd McShay projects they will take South Carolina cornerback J.C. Horn in his latest mock. But there's been all this conversation about what the Cowboys, who love to make the splash, might do if a splash should fall into their lap. And so as I bring the whole squad in, including Rob Ninkovich, I start with our brand-new draft insider, Matt Miller. Matt, what do you think the Cowboys should be thinking about sitting 10 in round one?
Yeah, I mean, everyone's going to sit here and say defense, defense, defense. That's what we said last year as well. And what did Jerry Jones do? He saw CeeDee Lamb slip in the draft, and he said, never mind, because the best defense is a good offense. It's the NFL in 2021. You just need to outscore people. You don't necessarily have to stop them. So I would be the biggest advocate to do whatever it takes on Thursday night, April 29th, to go get this guy, Kyle Pitts, because this would make this, I said it yesterday, the best offense in the NFC. And I know Packers and Buccaneers fans are mad at me. I'm okay with this. When you have Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb, Michael Gallup, Kyle Pitts, Zeke Elliott in the backfield, and a healthy Dak Prescott, you now have something, a strength. Drafting one corner is not going to make this defense instantly better. Let's not forget, the draft is 7 rounds. Just because you go offense in round one does not mean you can't go defense in rounds 2 through 7. Last year, Jeremy Chinn was picked at like 50 overall. You can find good defensive players later in the draft. If Kyle Pitts is there at 10, or you can go get him, I think you have to do it.
So, Joey Galloway, I'm envisioning your average football fan who's been sitting home and didn't watch a lot of Florida football last year and has been, all of a sudden, the last few weeks has been inundated with his name, Kyle Pitts. Kyle Pitts, he's the greatest prospect in the entire draft. Joey, for those who haven't seen him, tell everybody exactly what Kyle Pitts is.
I don't even really know how to describe some of the things he did this season. He is a 6'4", 6'5", Julio Jones type of tight end guy. You know, he's like, when you watch him play, he can get in a tight end position, block, do the physical things. You can spread him out, you can put him in the slot, and he's hard to deal with. A tremendous catch radius. And I've said, outside of quarterbacks, Kyle Pitts is the answer to every other question that you would ask me about this draft. When watching him play, it is like, throw him the ball. Just get it in his area, and he will make a play for you. He's an outstanding tight end that is a playmaker that can also play receiver. I love Kyle Pitts and what he brings to any team that needs a playmaker.
Nice. Fair enough. And so I've always said, however, never make a decision until you ask a linebacker. So, Rob Ninkovich, what do you think the Cowboys need to do with the most significant asset they have to work with right now, their first pick in the draft?
I think they need to go and get a linebacker. That's what I think. And being the 23rd ranked defense last season, with having some of the guys on their roster that they paid that haven't come to produce the way that they expected them to produce, I think that they go out there and try and draft a franchise defensive player. Yes, a franchise defensive player, because right now, if you can get to the quarterback, we all know how important that is. The quarterback is key to this league, but if you can get to that quarterback and you can put pressure on a quarterback, that helps you win football games. So the Cowboys, since 2012, they've had 15 draft picks, defensive draft picks in their top 100 picks. 7 of them are gone. So they don't even have some of the people that they've drafted high in the draft. So they need to go out there, draft somebody high, win on somebody that they draft, and keep them in the franchise for a long time.
If you're looking for a linebacker, names like Micah Parsons will come up, and Aziz Ojulari, you can rush the passer, and Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah, and other names like that. So, Dan Graziano, I'll let you sort of settle all of this. When push comes to shove, what are the Cowboys likeliest to do at number 10 in this draft?
They're likeliest to take a defensive player with that first-round pick. I can tell you that the Cowboys' focus in the first round right now is on defense. They know they need to get that fixed. They feel good about their offense, so their focus is on defense. However, I would have told you the same exact thing a year ago, and it was true a year ago. They were thinking defense. They were expecting to take a defensive player. They had their eye on defensive tackle. CeeDee Lamb was still sitting there at number 17 when they were picking. They had him ranked as a top five player in the entire draft. They thought it would have been foolish to pass on a player that they had ranked that high at 17, so they took him, even though they needed defense, and it ended up playing out that they could have used the defensive help. But that's really the right way to draft. I think if Kyle Pitts were sitting there at 10, they would probably change the plan and take him, but I don't think he's going to be.
No, I mean, I think Matt Miller would tell you that if Kyle Pitts is sitting there at 10, we will flap our arms and fly to the moon. That seems like an extraordinarily unlikely scenario, but it's a good way to look at the situation. Then we work our way this morning to Tom Brady. Did you see him earlier this week with Strahan on GMA? He just won his seventh Super Bowl. He turns 44 in August. He shows no signs of slowing down. And in that sit down with Strahan this week, he talked about what it is that still motivates him.
So Tom, what more do you have to prove?
I don't think proving it for me is the motivation. Like, I still want to play. You know, I got like a little sickness in me that just wants to throw a freaking spiral. You know what I mean? Also about football, once you stop, you can't go back and do it. I got some more football in me. Not a lot, and I know that, but what I got left, I'm gonna give everything I got.
I found that such an interesting comment. I still have a little sickness in me that just wants to throw a spiral. Rob Ninkovich, you played with Tom for years, and I know you're good friends. What do you take away as you hear that piece of that conversation?
Yeah, he's got a little sickness in him. I mean, come on, there's not many 43-year-old men that want to continue to play in the NFL after they win a Super Bowl. You'd see a lot of guys win a Super Bowl, like myself, win the Super Bowl, walk away. Hey, I'm done. I've done everything I need to do in this game, and I'm the best to ever do it, but he still wants to play, and he's right about any other sport. If you're a basketball player, you can go and play a pickup basketball game. If you play baseball, you can go hit a few baseballs. When you're done playing football, you're never going to strap the pads on. You're never going to go and put the pad. You're not going to go play club tackle football with full pads on. I hope not anyway. But I think that Tom, he definitely has the drive in him. He's going to be 44 years old. And my only worry is it only takes one hit. And every year after 40, the risk increases. I mean, it's a young man's game. You're playing with 21-year-old kids. And if I was a young linebacker, you better believe Tom Brady, I want to put a big pop on him. I want to hit him. So it's going to be interesting this year. I want to see him walk out healthy on his own 2 feet. But history, you can look back on all history in football. Most guys, they don't walk away on their own.
What do you think, Joey?
I think Rob makes a good point when he says that the little statement of, you know, you can't go do it again. And I think all of us get to the end of our careers and we think, once we walk out these doors of the NFL, this will be the last time you ever play football. And if you're blessed, like a guy like Tom Brady, to play as long as he has and to still have that fire after all these years, I think that's the rarest part of what Tom Brady is to accomplish what he's accomplished and still have that desire to go out and do it. If you're blessed enough to play in the NFL, that's number one, but to go long enough that your fire is still going and you've been in it for so many years that you don't want to walk away from it is special. And it's special to watch and it's fun to look at and see what he's doing. And it's interesting to see how long that fire is going to burn, because if it continues to burn, he looks like he has a lot of football left in him.
It could turn out that way. Nico, we got to get together a football game. One Mississippi, two Mississippi, two hand touch, cut the middle, rush the passer. I got you covered. All right, as we continue, coming up, they're calling Trevor Lawrence a can't-miss prospect. So why should there still be caution? We'll explain. This is Get Up. Today we're on ESPN2.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
We are back on Get Up, and Trevor Lawrence has been the unquestioned number one pick in this draft going back to before the start of last college football season, frankly, going back to his freshman year. But just how good can this generational talent be at the next level? Let's take a closer look.
He has everything that you look for in a quarterback prospect.
Trevor Lawrence will be the number one pick.
When you look at Trevor Lawrence, what do you see? For some, he's a tall, lanky kid with a powerful right arm. For others, he looks more like a professional surfer. But if you're an NFL scout, what you see is a generational talent. And here's why. He's big, 6'6". He's mobile, 7.3 yards per rush the last two seasons. He's Clemson's all-time leader in passer efficiency rating and yards per attempt. He's also a winner. Lawrence didn't lose a single regular season game in high school or in college. The two losses he did suffer at Clemson, however, both came in big spots. Outdueled by Joe Burrow in the 2020 National Championship game.
LSU sits on the throne.
And by Justin Fields in this past year's semifinal.
A night to remember for Ohio State.
Those defeats have not soured anyone, it does not seem. Mel Kiper Jr. grades Lawrence as the fourth highest quarterback he's ever scouted in four decades. Sandwiched between Hall of Famers Peyton Manning and Jim Kelly. And that is why, when you watch the NFL draft on ESPN April 29, what you will see is Trevor Lawrence, the first pick off the board to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So that, I think, is a foregone conclusion. He is Matt Miller, our draft scout. So, Matt, you heard me mention there, Mel says he's the fourth best quarterback prospect he's ever scouted. As you have scouted him, where does he rank amongst the very best prospects you've ever seen?
Yeah, I've been doing it as long as Mel. Jim Kelly was drafted the year I was born, so I don't have that time span that Mel does. But he is one of the greatest quarterback prospects I've ever evaluated. I think you would put him up there with Andrew Luck as far as great prospects. As you mentioned, the mobility is exceptional. Listen, he is a great, great prospect. But the one thing that doesn't get talked about enough is, what if it doesn't work? And that is a big part of this, because it is the NFL draft. If it doesn't work, what do we look for with Trevor Lawrence? I think the fact that there were five interceptions in his last six games, there were times where the delivery gets elongated. The Virginia Tech game that we're showing right here, he struggled big time that game. Completion percentage was about 20 points lower than it normally is for him. So there are some things he has to work on. And I think one of the questions, Greeny, that we haven't discussed a lot is Urban Meyer's actually never coached in the NFL. Urban Meyer taking his first NFL job with a rookie quarterback. That is a dynamic that I will be very interested to see play out. I'm excited about Trevor Lawrence. He is a great all-time prospect, but there are still questions that we have to get answered about his ability to translate to the NFL.
That's fair. Joey Galloway, generational talent. What do you think?
I don't like to use that term because it literally depends on his situation, what pieces are around him. What is his offensive line like? Does he have a chance to stand in the pocket like he did at Clemson? And so when we look at Trevor Lawrence, he is a tremendous quarterback. He has all the measurables that you ask for. But because we judge guys on wins, on stats, that will depend heavily on the guys around him. When you look at guys in the NFL, it is like, you know, when a guy has a really good offensive line or when a quarterback has a really good run game, they're a different quarterback. You need these things because of guys like Rob Ninkovich on the other side who are very talented on the defense. You need a lot of pieces around you to be successful. If they can do that in Jacksonville, Trevor Lawrence will be outstanding.
And so, Graziano, this thought just sort of jumped into my head. So with all the other quarterbacks in this year's class, we talk about fits and needs and, you know, do the Jets like Zach Wilson better than Justin Fields and do the 49ers like Mac Jones. Is it safe to say that all 32 teams, all 32 general managers, if they had the first pick and they needed a quarterback, every one of them would take Trevor Lawrence? Is that a reasonable thing to say?
I think it's reasonable. I don't know that I can say I've polled all 32 and gotten that. But yeah, that's definitely the consensus. I think if the Jets, for instance, had been in that spot, if they had kept losing late in the year, then he would be going to the Jets. But, you know, he's definitely viewed very, very highly. But, I mean, Matt's point is a very good one. No one is situation-proof, right? I mean, if this is a mess, like if Urban Meyer can't do this job, then there's a problem. If Darrell Bevell doesn't have the right kind of, you know, offense for him to thrive in, then it could be a problem. We've definitely seen first-round quarterback picks not make it. I don't think there's anybody out there saying, oh, this is Trevor Lawrence is probably not going to make it or he's going to be a bust. But it's a good reminder that no one is situation-proof. Where you land and who coaches you matters a lot in terms of your NFL future, especially at this position.
That's fair. But the point is that could be said about literally anyone. As we discuss him as a prospect, he checks every box, right? There's nothing that we're missing here.
Everyone.
As far as he's concerned. If things go wrong, it'll be because the things that go wrong around him, you put him in the right position, and there's every reason to think he will succeed. Okay, so as we mentioned, we are 20 days away from the beginning of the NFL draft, and I have the great privilege of being the host for the first two nights of our coverage here on ESPN. And so I've been doing a great deal of diving into all of this. And so I've put together a couple of thoughts here, and I want to bounce them off of Matt and Joey and see how we do. Here is my first prediction. Matt, I'm looking at you. I believe that some team in the NFL is going to trade back into the bottom of the first round, as we've seen happen before, to take Davis Mills, the quarterback from Stanford. I think he is the guy ultimately teams who are thinking long-term project will say he has the most upside, and they will want that fifth year. So I believe we will see a team trade into the back of the first round to take Davis Mills from Stanford. What do you think?
I don't think you're crazy. Not at all. I mean, we've seen this happen before. The Baltimore Ravens traded back in to get Lamar Jackson. That ended up working out very, very well for them. So with Davis Mills, the traits are all there, Greeny. The arm strength is there. The size is there. The mobility is there. He only started 13 games in college. It's really the only question. So I don't even know if it would have to be a team trading back in. I think you could look at the New Orleans Saints sitting right there at the end of round one and say, okay, if the big five quarterbacks are off the board, does Sean Payton believe in Davis Mills as his quarterback of the future? He could sit behind Jameis Winston for a year, and then you unleash him in 2022 after he's had some time to acclimate. So I would not be shocked if you are announcing that trade on ESPN on Thursday night.
Quickly, is 24 to the Steelers too early? Would that be too early for him to go?
I think it's too early based on value, like on everyone's big board. But when you're getting a quarterback, if you believe in him, then it's never too early.
Okay, here's my next one. And Joey, I'm looking right at you as I say this. There are a lot of really elite, as there usually are, but this year it feels particularly so, elite wide receiver prospects at the top of this draft and a handful of elite offensive line prospects at the top of this draft. And there's a lot of debate, well, should they take Ja'Marr Chase? Should they take Penei Sewell? And you can almost insert any team in there. In my opinion, given the option of taking the elite lineman or taking the elite receiver, you take the lineman every time because they never bust and the receivers are less than a 50-50 proposition. I say that to Joey Galloway, one of the great receivers we've ever seen. What do you think?
Number one, I love the line, I don't think you're crazy. That there's a lot of leeway when you start your statement with, I don't think you're crazy. But I wouldn't say every time, but as crazy as this is, I'm going to lean toward an offensive lineman also because at receiver, I need my quarterback to be protected. I want my quarterback to be able to stand in the pocket and throw me the football. So because I want the football and because I need my quarterback to be in one place and comfortably delivering it to me, I would take an offensive lineman after you have me on the team, of course.
I got you. I grant you the exception of yourself. But this all sort of manifests itself, pardon me, in Cincinnati with the fifth pick. They may be staring at the decision. You could take Ja'Marr Chase or you could take Penei Sewell. And my argument is take the tackle. It never fails. All right, last one. Matt Miller, I don't know. We haven't known each other long enough to know where you stand on the whole drafting a running back in the first round thing. Mel Kiper would yell me off the set if I said this to him.
Right.
But I believe there are three running backs in this draft who are worthy of being taken in the first round. They are Najee Harris, who everybody knows from Alabama, Travis Etienne, who everybody knows from Clemson, and Javonte Williams, who I think fewer people know, from North Carolina. Three running backs that are worthy of being first-round picks. What do you say?
You've been doing your homework, Greeny. I love it. And I agree with you, actually, that three running backs are worthy. I don't know that we'll see three drafted in the first round, but you mentioned Travis Etienne, amazing speed, a great off-tackle runner. I'm so happy that you mentioned Javonte Williams. I've talked to coaches at North Carolina, and they say, this was the leader of our football team. a running back being the leader of your football team. He is violent. He's aggressive. As you see, he looks for contact, but he has the body style that this works. I think with Najee Harris, you're getting a Le'Veon Bell, Matt Forte type running back coming out of Alabama who went back for his senior season. He's an exceptional, high-character person, as well as a great player who can do things like jump over Notre Dame linebackers or just straight run you over if you get in his way. So will we see three go? I think the Miami Dolphins, Pittsburgh Steelers, Buffalo Bills are three teams that could be looking at running backs in round one. But just like last year where we had 4 to 5 running backs who were very highly graded, I think this year we're going to see that as well with three guys who are exceptionally high graded.
Right. And the questions are all about the position. None of them are about the projection for the player. All right. We'll leave that thought there for the moment. Oh, a reminder. Our next UFC fight night is tomorrow from Vegas. Our middleweight main event features the 6th-ranked Marvin Vettori taking on 10th-ranked Kevin Holland. The prelims start noon Eastern on ESPN and ESPN+, followed by the main card on ABC. And ESPN Plus. Coming up, the Panthers made the move to acquire Sam Darnold. Will Carolina still take a quarterback 8 in the draft if there's one sitting there? We're talking about it. It's Get Up. Today we're on ESPN 2.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
We are back, and this is becoming a Friday staple on our program. Dan Graziano, looking back over the week, what were three very important things that happened in the NFL?
Green, we got video of Dak Prescott throwing a football. Remember we used to talk about Dak Prescott every day on the show? It seems like we haven't in a while, but here he is throwing a football. Very encouraging. Obviously, he's coming off that significant injury. He signs the big deal. The Cowboys are anticipating that he'll be ready to go for training camp and the regular season, and obviously you see video like this that gets you excited about that prospect. Carlos Dunlap, the pass rusher, re-signed with the Seattle Seahawks. You say, why is anybody tuning in before 6 a.m. Seattle time to hear about Carlos Dunlap? Well, I'll tell you, after he signed, he said he had spoken to Russell Wilson, and Russell Wilson, the Seattle quarterback, told him he's sticking around, he's all in, and go Hawks. And obviously that's of interest for anyone whose team still thought it might have a chance to trade for Russell Wilson this offseason. Seems unlikely at this point. A quarterback who did get traded, as you know, Greeny, Sam Darnold from the Jets to the Carolina Panthers. That ends the Sam Darnold era, as it looks like the Jets will be picking Zach Wilson with the number 2 overall pick. And it tells us that Carolina has moved down its list of possibilities. They had hoped to be able to trade for Deshaun Watson. We all know about what's going on there. And maybe draft a guy, but it seems like Carolina thinks the guy they would want to draft is not going to be there. They make the deal for Sam Darnold and hope that he, who's about the age of some of these prospects coming out, play quarterback in the draft, has a lot left in him in terms of his potential.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, he's 23 years old, and so that's a point well taken. Whether they're you could look at it two ways there, Dan. I think you could look at it as the guy they want, they figure won't be there, or they may look at it as Sam Darnold, if you sort of project him, might be a better prospect than almost any of the quarterbacks who were in this draft. And I've heard other people say that. So, Ninkovich, I haven't heard your take on this yet, but there does feel like a possibility that one of the 5 big quarterbacks in this draft fall to 8 where the Panthers are picking. It might be Justin Fields. Were that to happen, having just made this trade for Darnold, would you advise them to take the quarterback if he's sitting there? Ninko.
I wouldn't. I'd go with Sam. Look, I mean, when you have a party when you're traded, I think that he was probably excited to have a reset and a fresh start on a new team. Look, you see the things that he's been able to do in the first few years of his career. Sure, there's some moments where you're like, what is he thinking? But then also, he makes some throws. You're like, wow, that is a great throw. And I think that he could be a great addition to Carolina. They're built better than the Jets right now. I think their coaching is a lot better than the Jets. The Jets are in a rebuilding phase. Let the Jets go out and get a quarterback. I think Carolina needs to stick with Sam Darnold. Let him be your starting quarterback. Go out there, get him a weapon at number 8.
What do you think, Joe? I mean, you scout all these guys, watch them anyway, through all their college careers and all the rest of that. Like, if Sam Darnold were to just be dropped into this draft class, which obviously there's, He's got 3 years of history in the NFL, but you understand the point I'm making. Like, how would you evaluate him relative to, take Trevor Lawrence out of the discussion, the other guys that we're talking about here?
I think Sam Darnold is as talented as anyone in this current draft, and he has experience in the NFL. We don't know what these other guys are going to do once they see the speed of NFL defenses and run NFL offenses. But Sam Darnold, if you're Carolina and you've made this move, you believe that this 23-year-old quarterback is going to be your guy that you can develop your team around. You know, Carolina is a team that needs some help. They didn't make the playoffs last season. And we know in today's world, these coaches don't get a long lifespan if you're not winning football games. If I'm Matt Rhule, I'm thinking Sam Darnold is my guy. That's why we made this move. And now let's go get some other pieces around him to help him be successful.
I agree. And you know what, Nico, you make a very good point. You know that things have gone bad in an organization, i.e., in this case, the New York Jets, when you're a quarterback and your team has given up on you and traded you and you are throwing a celebratory party. Like, that's the opposite of the way things generally work in the National Football League, but that's exactly what it was. That was Sam saying, thank God I'm getting the heck out of there. Let's see if the grass really is greener in Carolina. Okay, let's move on to the receiver conversation here because we all know, just get them the ball. And here's Matt Miller. Let's start sort of making comparisons for some of the receivers in this class. Let's start with Ja'Marr Chase.
Yeah, we can start with Ja'Marr Chase. Actually, Devontae Smith here, and I'm going with Marvin Harrison. I know it's maybe not fun to compare a player to a Hall of Famer, but a smaller receiver, slimmer receiver who just gets open and has great, great hands. Devontae Smith did not drop passes in college. You see the ability to extend. The catch radius is exceptional. So Devontae Smith, I'm going to go with Marvin Harrison as the comparison for this first rounder. Another Alabama wide receiver, guys, Jalen Waddle, one of the most electric players in college football. We saw that shorten this year due to injury, unfortunately, but I see an ability like Tyreek Hill. He's not as great at the 50-50 balls. Tyreek Hill, very underrated in that regard, but Jalen Waddle's ability, as you see here, to stretch the defense, to take the top off them. But then also, this is not just an undersized vertical receiver. He's great with the ball in his hands after the catch. And then finally, we have to go to the best wide receiver in the 2021 draft class, and that is Ja'Marr Chase. I see a more physical Amari Cooper from a physical standpoint. It is very hard to find a comparison for Ja'Marr Chase at 6 foot tall, 208 pounds with a 4.4 speed, but Amari Cooper right there in that range as a 6 foot tall, 210 pound receiver with very, very good speed. I think Chase's hands are a little bit better coming out of college. And as you see here, I mean, against the best defenses in the nation, his ability to stretch vertically, to run after the catch, he is a complete prospect who should have no development period in the NFL. You plug him right away as your wide receiver one.
Really well done on that, Matt. Meanwhile, Joey, I know that you don't think 4.4 is particularly fast. The rest of us think, boy, that sounds like a really fast guy. But if you were to just sort of put them in a vacuum, I understand different fits and all that kind of thing. But if you put them in a vacuum, which of these receivers are you taking first? Which is your first draft pick amongst the big receivers in this class?
And you're telling me that Kyle Pitts is off the board?
Yes, not including Pitts.
That's where I picked the
guys who have WR next to their name.
Yeah, I don't think you go wrong with Ja'Marr Chase or Devontae Smith. It is hard for me to say which one of those guys is better. I think both are very special. I think both would be very good on any offense in the NFL. I think they're that good, and Jalen Waddle is right behind them. But I like those top two guys, either one of them.
And then I know that you don't like to make comparisons of players in college to the NFL, which I totally respect. A lot of NFL players feel that way. But how about to you? As you watch these guys play in college, which one of them do you watch and say, hey, that guy kind of reminds me of Joey Galloway?
Well, I look at him and say, yeah, that guy, you know, he looks kind of fast, but then I don't see a 4.1 out there, Greeny. And if I'm going to throw me in the conversation, someone's going to have to run a 4.1 before I'm willing to say, hey, that guy reminds me of me, because I haven't seen many 4.1s. That is a rare territory to get into.
I love the way you discuss yourself. And frankly, there's nothing wrong with that at all. Joey, bottom line, right now, you're 49 years old. If you trained for a little, well, I didn't even need to train. You're doing it anyway. How fast are you running the 40-yard dash right now?
Well, Greeny, when you open the show and introduce me, you say Joey Galloway's running a 4.3. I thought you actually knew that I am running a 4.3. So we're right on the same page, Greeny. When you bring me on the show and say Galloway's running a 4.3, that's me. We're together on that, Greeny. I don't think you're crazy.
At the age of 49, Matt, at the age of 49, the man is running a 4.3.
Incredible.
He's still reverse dunking a basketball. You're the best, Joe. Thank you, my friend. We'll see you soon. Meanwhile, another reminder about this week's NBA Saturday primetime matchup. We'll talk about that later. Let's talk about Justin Fields. He's added a second pro day. Is he sending a message to one specific team? To find out as we continue, get up. Today we're on ESPN2.